south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, first a few emails, and then we'll get to the stuff that's guaranteed to piss off the wokesters and the toxic, malignant Twitter mob. First, this from Patty. She says, Johnny, let me start by saying I really love the podcast. I'm also politically incorrect and out-of-the-box thinking libertarian, so it's great to listen to someone who speaks my language. I also appreciate how much I've learned by listening over the past 6 months or so. Anyway, last year I listened to a book by Kathleen Petticord entitled How to Retire Overseas, which was a pretty exhaustive book covering pretty much everything you might need to consider before moving out of the States. After listening to that book, I'm considering my own situation, and I really am leaning towards moving to Belize. I know Belize is north of Guatemala, but I've never heard you say anything about it on your podcast. Would you be willing to share your thoughts about it? Thanks in advance. Signed, Patty. Well, Patty, thanks for that. But since you've only been listening to the show about 6 months, if you go back a year or two or three or five or seven back into the archives, you'll see I've mentioned Belize many times. I've also been there many times. In fact, the very first bad taste I got in my mouth about Belize was the very first time I crossed the border in a car. I was going from Guatemala to the Mexican Mayan Riviera, you know, Tulum, Playa del Carmen, Cancun, all those vacation spots. And the easiest way if you're driving from Guatemala is take a shortcut through Belize. It's about 4 hours. At least I thought it was going to be smooth sailing. You swing through Belize City, which is a dump, then swing north to the Mexican border, and then you're in the Mayan Riviera. Sounds so easy, huh? 4 hours on the road. Oh, and once you hit Mexico, it's a beautiful ride because the highway goes right along the ocean for at least a couple of hundred kilometers. So anyway, as soon as I got across the border to Belize from Guatemala, they made you stop at a little hut of an insurance office. Well, it turns out they instantly gouge you for close to $100. Because, you see, they've got a swindle going that you have to buy Belizean insurance to drive in that country, even if you're going to drive for 2 minutes in and out. Doesn't matter how much insurance you have on your car from some other country, it's not legal in Belize. Even though Belizeans with cars, practically none of them have insurance, you have to get it as a foreigner driving in. And you can't just buy it for 3 or 4 hours or a day. You got to buy it for the whole month. Oh, and by the way, they won't let you take a rental car from Guatemala to Belize. Or, for that matter, from Belize, if you rent a car there, to Guatemala. It's all about border and land disputes that have been going on for years. You see, traditionally, Guatemalans think they own Belize. That is, that Belize is Guatemalan territory, because it used to be a long time ago. And the Belizeans think they own a chunk of Guatemala. It's an age-old discussion, even though the borders are sound and were drawn over 50 years ago. Oh, and I should tell you that every single gringo I've ever known who's lived in Belize or have gone on vacation in Belize have a robbery, theft, or extortion story. Except in those little islands off Belize called the Cays. That's where most wealthy Americans and Europeans live, though few live there year-round. What you've got there is mostly turnkey condos for people who only come down a week or a month or during certain seasons of the year. They've got first-world marinas there, too, where wealthy gringos dock their boats. Oh, and if you want to live there, it's more than first world expensive. And though most of your neighbors will be first world doctors and lawyers and such, you might never see your neighbors because for them, it's a second or third vacation home. Believe me, the only way to live a first world life on a Belize K is to make first world money or have a first world pension. You won't be able to do it on a Social Security check. Sure, you can live on the Belize mainland easily on a Social Security check. But believe me, it's a young person's game. You don't want to grow old in Belize because they got very poor healthcare facilities. In fact, the last time I checked, they've only got one board-certified oncologist living permanently in the whole country. The thing is, their medical system is very basic, very rudimentary. Why? Because they don't have a medical school in Belize. That means they don't turn out their own doctors. They got to import them all. And because it's such a poor country, I believe it's the fourth poorest amongst Latin American countries. Number one being Venezuela, two Haiti, three Cuba, and then Belize. And for that reason, it's very difficult to get doctors and medical professionals to want to move there. So what they do is import a lot of them from Cuba. Nothing wrong with that, but the hospitals and clinics in Belize are very short on the latest technology. Which brings us back to the statement I made earlier. Living in Belize is a young person's game, because once you hit around 50 years old, you start thinking about your health. Ask anyone who's half a century old, that's when things start going wrong. Let me tell you, if you have a heart attack in Belize, even if your next door neighbor's a New York heart specialist, remember, he's not going to be down there visiting but 1 or 2 weeks a year. Not to mention, he's 1,000 miles away from his first world hospital or clinic. So then what happens if there's an emergency? Well, if you've got dough and good insurance, they'll airlift you to a hospital in Mexico or Guatemala, and hopefully you'll survive the trip. So I don't really care how many positive write-ups or blogs you've been reading about Belize. If you're over 50 and you've got any kind of chronic or serious medical condition at all, well, you're taking a chance. The thing is, Belize has less than 500,000 people in the whole country. And that means the whole infrastructure in the country basically sucks. They haven't got the money, the machines, the tech, or the qualified manpower to bring the country into the 21st century. Now, of course, if you're a backpacker or have a really laid-back lifestyle, Belize can be just fine and really cheap as long as you don't live on the quays. Then again, you're sure to be SOL if you have a stroke or heart attack. You can dial 911, and if you're in the city, the ambulance will come. But if you're out in the boonies, it might not come till tomorrow. The next reason Belize as a plan B is not a very good idea for modern Americans is that there's almost no variety in the local stores. Sure, they've got all the essentials, but there are no big chain stores, no Walmarts, Costcos, Sam's Clubs, or Ace Hardwares. I know, some of us hate those places, but sometimes we have to go there to get what we want. So you can get what you need, the basics, but what you want, that's another story. Only if you're into theater, concerts, art galleries, and great restaurants and cultural experiences. Forget about it in Belize. As mentioned, with less than 500,000 people in the whole country, cultural events for first world people, as we know them, are pretty much non-existent. Though there are plenty of annual festivals with local music and carnival-style traditions. Most gringos and expats get bored of that stuff pretty fast. So if you're looking for cultural diversions and distractions, forget about Belize. So add that to the poor infrastructure and limited services. You'll find if you do select Belize as your plan B, you'll be roughing it a lot of the time. And the upscale amenities they have are basically for tourists just popping in for a week or two. However, if you're a backpacker or laid-back beachcomber or just want to retire into the sunset, Belize could be for you. Though, I have to admit, every gringo and expat I know who simply retires into the sunset with nothing to do, soon enough he starts drinking way too much. No lie, it's happened to quite a few of my gringo expat buddies. And one last thing, Patty. That article you referenced by Kathleen Petticord, you know her background? She's been a charter member and backbone of International Living for some 20 or 30 years now. And for ages now, International Living's been pushing Costa Rica, Belize, and Ecuador. So you've definitely missed out on any early opportunities. In other words, forget about getting in on the ground floor of anything. Now, if you heard last week's show, you remember what I said about International Living, right? They always tried to lead newbie green gringos into their hand-picked land and real estate projects. They're not in business to be your friend or hold your hand through the Plan B process unless they get paid. They've got a big staff, so they've got big overhead. Oh, and one last thing about Belize. Here's a close-to-home story. A gringo acquaintance of mine, a world traveler, he must have been to 50 countries. Well, he was coming down to one of my Expat Insider seminars. Flying in from the UK, and he decided to first stop in Belize before the seminar because he'd never been there before, wanted to check it out. Well, he landed at the airport, checked into his beach hotel, not a cheap one either. He dropped his bags at the check-in desk, took a walk out back by the pool, and kept walking till he got to the sand in the ocean. That's what a lot of people do when they first land in their hotel before they even check in sometimes. Well, within minutes, two guys walked up to him, assaulted him, and took his iPhone. Maybe it's a record, I don't know, but he said that he'd only been in the country 1 hour before he got robbed. In broad daylight, too. So just remember this. I know some gringos and expats who live in Belize, and every last one of them has been extorted or robbed. One of those guys explained it like this. He thinks it's because gringos and expats instantly let their guard down because the locals speak English. In fact, when you talk to gringos and expats who live there, that's the big draw, the primary reason they moved there. Because it's the only Latin American country where English is their first language. It's a big draw for lots of gringos and expats, especially older gringos and expats who don't think they'll ever be able to learn decent enough Spanish to move to a country like Guatemala, Panama, Colombia, etc., etc. But if you ask me, I think moving to a country just because the locals speak English, that could be a factor, but shouldn't be your main reason. It's not a very sound basis for a plan B. Though at least the expats in Belize did pull the trigger and got the hell out of Dodge. They got that going for them. However, I've met enough gringos and expats who moved to Belize and stayed there a while and decided to go back to the States. That makes you wonder. Proving the point that you have to live at least 6 months in a given Latin American country before you should ever consider buying land or real estate. Because if you decide to go back to the States or move, you have to remember, most of the real estate market here in Latin America is cash. So if you own a place and decide to put it up for sale, it could take you a year or two to sell the place. And it's not because you won't have lots of interest. You will. But buyers with cash, very difficult to find. In fact, the last house I sold, I think it was 2 years ago now, it was up for sale for over a year. And I had offers. The first five, in fact, offered cash with some farmland or cash with a couple of cars or some cash in a beachfront lot. Or they had some cash and wanted you to give them a mortgage for the rest. But those are not clean deals. So remember that. If you buy some land or real estate in Latin America and you feel like you have to dump it for whatever reason, it's not at all like up in the States where everyone could get a mortgage with 5 or 10% down. So just know if you buy a place, you should be thinking about staying in it for the long haul. Because flipping properties down here is almost unheard of. Be patient. It'll sell, but it might take a year or two. And now an email from Dave. Yeah, another Dave. He says, Johnny, I don't know if you're bringing your seminar this time to Lake Atitlan, Guatemala. You know, the first or maybe second most beautiful lake in the world. If you are bringing them there, Johnny, I can make a plea as to why they should start the Guatemalan residency process immediately. I'm certain that's the way to go. I'm also renting an entire house and I can show them what $650 a month will get them. Now, I think I'm paying a little more than some for the size, only because it has an enclosed garage. I have a car, a motorcycle, a scooter, and a bicycle, which I like to keep clean and protected. That's why the garage and why I rent this place. Anyway, Johnny, he says, let me know if you want me to talk to your group if you bring them to Lake Atitlan. I'm in Panajachel on the lake, but technically Jucaña, right outside of it. If you're going to take them to the barbecue in San Pedro, I'll shoot over there for sure. Signed, Dave. Well, Dave, thanks for the offer, but the seminar group is not going to Lake Atitlan, simply because it's a 2.5 to 3 hour ride off our planned route. But because I highly recommend the area, it's a must-see. And for some people, a great plan B destination. Anyway, Dave, some of our attendees have plans to go there and check it out. Those are people, though, who are staying on extra days after the seminar so they can fit it into the schedule. Talk about getting off the radar, if that's what you had in mind. If you live in one of the little towns around Lake Atitlan, there's 12 or so of them, you could pretty much restructure your life and get way under the radar. You can virtually blend in and disappear. I can't think of very many places in the world where you can still do that. And still have access to everything you need to live like a first world person. Anyway, Dave, thanks again for the offer. But you know, in all the 18 seminars I've done so far, we've never gone to Lake Atitlan for the seminar itself. Though after every seminar, there's always a group that stays on to check it out. And the fact is, you really have to spend at least 3 days there and do some town hopping utilizing those little boat taxis. It's a real eye-opener and tons of fun. There's a surprise around every corner. And as for real estate there, you have to see it to believe it. And now an email from, he calls himself, the 6 foot pole. You know, being from Chicago, I get it. I have lots of Polish friends up there. And they all, to a person, called each other Polacks. Kind of like black people call each other the N-word, as they seem to love to do. In some ways, it's like the word gringo. It could be a friendly greeting or a nasty insult. It's all in how Latinos say it. If, for example, some Latino on the street says, how you doing, gringo? Nothing wrong with that, but if he says, how you doing, gringo? There's a slightly toxic edge to that. Oh, and one thing I've noticed in my many years down here in Latin America, Latinas, the local ladies, almost never use the word gringo. Not to your face anyway, until they get to know you a bit. And when they do, they're very careful about not making it sound offensive. But Latino men, they use it all the time. So then how do Latinas refer to us? They call us Americanos, even though they're Americans too, South or Central Americans. And us gringos and Canadians are North Americans. It doesn't matter. They'll call us Americanos. That means gringos born in the USA. Oh, and there's another sort of odd linguistic convention I've noticed. When you're sitting with a bunch of Latinos or Latinas, and they're talking about a friend of theirs that may have married a North American and moved to the States, if they say he or she married a gringo or gringa, that means they married a white North American. However, if they say so-and-so family member married an Estados Unidense, that most likely means they married a Latino or Latina living up in the States. It doesn't matter how many generations a Latino family has lived up in the States, they'll never be considered gringos by Latinos living in Central and South America. They'll be Estados Unidenses, American citizens, but they'll never be gringos or gringas. So the terms gringo and gringa imply homegrown Caucasian Americans. And black Americans, they're Americanos Negros. But I digress. Man, did I digress. Back to this email from our 6-foot Pole. By the way, here in Latin America, Polish people are called Polacos. Anyway, our emailer says, Engineer Johnny, you're busy with the seminar coming up for sure, so I'll keep it quick. I need some advice from Johnny the engineer this time. You see, we have very hard water where we live here in Mexico. So much so that sometimes it's easier to thrash, bash, and trash my dishes rather than clean them the usual way. So I was wondering if you have any suggestion for water treatment systems other than water softeners, like the ones the Culligan man installs. What is your take on those, for example, capacitive electronic descalers? Then he gives me a link to one of these on Amazon. The good ones are around $300. And if you're a do-it-yourselfer, you could install it yourself. Though, if you call a plumber, a Latin plumber, of course, you're talking about Latin America here, they'll install it and maybe do it right, but they won't know what the hell it is. They'll most certainly have never seen one before, though they will have seen the usual suspect Culligan water softeners. I'm sure you've seen those. They're one or two big steel tanks that sit in your basement or garage. They're basically loaded with a bunch of pellets, kind of salt pellets. Some upscale Latino families have them installed down here, but very few. They are available at pool supply places. You'll find if you wash your hands with salt water from one of those Culligan units or similar ones, the water can feel kind of slippery and slimy, but the worst thing for me is that it puts salt into the water. Not a lot, and you won't notice it if you're used to eating a lot of salty things, but if you don't put salt on anything, you'll notice. Because, you know, it's an ion exchange system. It's taking out the calcium and magnesium and putting salt into the water. You know what that can do to your health and blood pressure. Anyway, I've lived many, many years in Central America, and it's volcano country, so the water is pretty hard. So yes, you do get some hard scum buildup in the pipes and on dishes and sinks, bathtubs and shower stalls. So in some houses, especially older houses, porcelain sinks, toilets, and faucets can start looking pretty nasty. And when it builds up, it can be murder to clean. It's nasty work, and it takes a harsh acid like muriatic acid. Which is why 99% of Latinos threw in the towel a long time ago and they don't bother. They just live with it. Now, you might think I'm a little anal about this, but I hate looking at scum called sarro down here that builds up on pipes and sinks. So in the last couple of houses I've built, I installed black porcelain fixtures and toilets. Of course, they're a little more expensive, but not only do they look pretty classy, that is, if there ever could be a situation where you could call a toilet classy. Anyway, it's just cosmetic. The hard water stains are there, but you can't see them. They're invisible. Oh, and to complete that anal picture I'm painting for you, all the dishes, cups, and saucers in my house are either dark gray or black, so any mineral stains just never show up. Of course, if you use things like clear wine glasses, you'll get some mineral spotting on those if they're air-dried. So, of course, that will happen if you put them in the dishwasher. In that case, you just tell your cleaning lady to towel-dry them. Then you'll never have any stains. And after every shower, you should wipe down the shower stall too, and you'll never have those stains. If you have a cleaning lady, you can let her do all that. And if you don't, maybe you'll get over it, maybe you won't. Though, I've spoken to a few gringo ladies here living in Latin America, who really do fret a bit and get slightly embarrassed when company comes over and have a look at the sink and the toilet. Though, I haven't met too many male gringo expats who cared about it either way. For sure, they're not going to towel dry their dishes. So, my advice, if you're anal about such things, get a cleaning lady. Or you might consider getting one of those capacitive electronic water descaler systems, as our 6-foot pole emailer pointed out. My take on those things? They're a fairly new technology and don't actually soften the water or remove any of the hardness or minerals. They just change the electric charge on the minerals flowing through so they don't stick to your pipes, fixtures, plates, and utensils. But here's the problem. If you're living in an older house and switch to that system, it probably won't do any good because your pipes in the walls are all scaled up already. And those systems won't remove the scale that's already built up in your pipes. Minerals will keep leaching out. Best bet is to install one of those systems in a brand new house that's got brand new pipes and fixtures. Then you'll probably be quite satisfied. I know some people have done that and it's worked fine. And as for dropping $300 on the unit, like I said, forget about it if it's an older house. If it's new, try it. If I ever build another house, I'll install one for sure. By the way, after being down here in Latin America 30 plus years now, I've seen so many horrifically stained toilets and sinks that I thought to myself many times, there's got to be a way to coat a toilet or a sink in the manufacturing process with something like Teflon, white or red or black, whatever color your sinks and fixtures are, so it's not noticeable and blends right in. The obvious reasoning being to repel those hard water minerals. Well, I talked to one of my engineering buddies. He's a materials engineer. He said, I think we could do it, patent it, and it would be a great success. Half the world has hard water. Not just Latin America. Parts of Europe have it really bad. So a few years back, we discussed the Teflon and or another kind of coating for porcelain fixtures. But as these things go, when the engineers and techies get together, we're always thinking of great new ideas. But no matter how excited we get in the moment, by the next morning, 99% of those ideas have faded away. But back to our 6-foot poles email. He says, Johnny, while on the topic of water, I'd love your own water filtration setup plans, ideally with some tips for dealing with heavy arsenic and fluoride contamination. We have very high levels here in Querétaro and Guananito, Mexico. Then he sends me a link pointing out just how contaminated more than half of the wells in Mexico are. Let me read a couple scary excerpts here for you. It starts out with a quote from a doctor talking to a mother. He says, lady, your daughter is too young to be urinating arsenic. Turns out, Fernanda Gonzalez was only 15 years old and an analysis reported heavy concentrations of arsenic in her urine, twice what is considered internationally safe as a level of risk. Then it says, researchers soon analyzed the urine of 275 people in the region and found levels of arsenic 10 to 30 times the WHO's recognized limit, with one mother and son exceeding the limit by 47 times. That's an excess of 4,700%. Researchers are reporting the source of arsenic to be hundreds of abandoned mines. The studies have also shown that high levels of arsenic and fluoride have reached wells in most of Mexico, in amounts much higher than the maximum allowable levels set by the WHO. Me, Johnny here. Yeah, like we trust the WHO, who are more than partially to blame for the COVID disaster. Anyway, then it says, even back in 2018, 4 years ago, 41% of all wells sampled in Mexico exceeded international risk levels for arsenic and fluoride. By 2018, the majority of Mexican states reported drinking water with excessive levels of fluoride, putting the population at high risk for dental fluorosis and the weakening of bones. By the way, it says there are 1,256 water treatment plants in Mexico, but only 1 in 10 remove arsenic and fluoride. And from tap water, arsenic passes into food that's cooked with it, and everyone cooks with tap water. That's why researchers are discovering it in bean salsa and even in soup. Even worse, there are wells with fluoride concentrations that are 6,400% more than the agreed-upon international safe limits. If you're wondering about excessive fluoride, it makes people docile and stupid. Then it says, because Mexico has so much arsenic in the water, they've lowered their standards and allow more than double the limit of the WHO international risk standards. With the international limit, 0.01 milligrams per liter of arsenic, in Mexico it's 0.0025. And the fact is it should be zero because metals accumulate in your body. It will do damage. With, by the way, one of the first signs of exposure to too much arsenic, the appearance of large moles on your skin. Ew. And according to the Center for Research in Advanced Materials, with slow arsenic poisoning, symptoms of the disease do not appear for 10, 15, or even 20 years. Then it says, and this is very scary, much of the arsenic-laden water that's drunk in Mexico exceeds 70 times the permissible limit by the WHO. It was first detected in 17 Mexican states in 2012, and by 2018, it progressed to 24 Mexican states. And remember, Mexico has got 31 states. That means more than 3/4 of the country is contaminated, with researchers saying even that's not a complete picture. The estimates are based on only a few wells sampled, not from the thousands and thousands of wells operating in the country. It's a huge underestimation of the real burden of exposure and diseases for the country as a whole, said the spokesman for the research team. Then it says, in recently testing the water supply for Guadalajara, one of the most populated and upscale cities in Mexico. It turns out the plant that supplies most of the domestic water network for the city has between 1.5 and 2.5 times the maximum permissible level set for arsenic by the WHO and 5 times the permissible level for fluoride. And now for the topper, the scariest part of all. It turns out independent studies have already taken samples from water bottlers and concluded that the population is also ingesting high levels of arsenic in their bottled water. In an analysis done by the National Polytechnic Institute, testing 30 different bottled water suppliers, they found with all the bottled water companies, the international norms for fluoride were exceeded. And 6 out of 10, that's 60% of all the bottled water suppliers, had arsenic levels beyond the WHO international limit. Oh, and get this, it says crops are irrigated with arsenic and fluoride-laden water too. Despite the fact that those chemicals mostly remain in the root and the stem of the crop, such as lettuce, jalapenos, etc., etc., chemicals do reach other parts of the plant. And finally, it says that samples were taken from 600 bottles of a popular mineral water called Peñafil, obtained from grocery stores in Jalisco and Mexico City. All showed excessive levels of arsenic. Because of that, it was removed from the shelves in the United States in 2019, though still on the shelves to this day in Mexico. Like we really need 20 more reasons not to set up our Plan B in Mexico, huh? What a tragedy. But if you live in Mexico, what do? Well, you can capture rainwater with your own big old cistern. I do that in my house. You could buy a nice under-the-counter water purification system or build the one that I recommend. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the plans. Of course, that means never cooking with tap water. Well, what about restaurants? They always cook with tap water. Oh, and you probably figured this out already. Make your own bottled water. Oh, and before I forget, one more comment from our 6-foot pole. He says, Johnny, speaking of the seminar, do attendees get to meet you personally and shake your hand, or do you only appear remotely as a shadow or on a screen? Well, Mr. P, I'm at the seminar the entire time, stay at the same hotel, and even sometimes pick up people at the airport. Though, if I catch you recording the seminar or filming me, you'll be restricted to a Mexican bottled water diet.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.